From the Lend Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 20th day of December 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of AgMarket.net. Dave Chatterton from Strategic Farm Marketing will be here to discuss the agricultural energies, and we'll take a look at a very, very cold and snowy week for the holiday with Don Day, a day weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. I'll also tell you about the upcoming Illinois Farm Agronomics Summits and how to get yourself registered for those in-person events in Mount Vernon, East Peoria, and DeKalb with the agricultural economist from the University of Illinois here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn for the day settled at $6.52. That was up 4¾. The May also at $6.52, up 4 cents. And December futures of next year, a penny higher at $5.96¼. January soybeans, $14.78½, 17¾ cents higher. The March at $14.79¾, up 16¼. And next year's November, 8½ higher at $13.89½ a bushel. Bean meal futures up $3.30 at $4.52.40. The bean oil for the day at $66.05, $1.64 higher. Wheat futures soft red up to $7.50½, the settlement price in the March. The hard red at $8.47, up 3½ cents. Live cattle futures in Chicago at $155.57½, 47½ cents lower for the February. March feeders at $185.25, $1.22½ higher. And lean hogs down $1.45 at $84.25 on the afternoon. Crude oil at $76.18, up about 80 cents for the day. Diesel fuel a penny higher at $3.02¼, and the gasoline at $2.23¼, about a 4¼ cents higher. Natural gas at $5.03¼, or rather $5.32, up 52¢. The Dow Jones Industrial Average about 163 points higher, and the S&P 500 up around 12¾ points. Wayne Nelson at AgMarket.net now joins us to take a look at the marketplace for this Tuesday afternoon. Hi, Wayne. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, pleasure to be here, Todd.
The market for soybeans was higher today, but it came back off those highs to finish up, and corn managed to turn green through the day, too.
Yeah, you know, we saw a nice little turnaround Tuesday here. A lot of talk about the cold weather coming in here. You know, a lot of feed needs go up during when we see sub-zero weather and tremendous like that. We have not, I think it's been 3 or 4 years since we've used the word blizzard, you know, for experiencing what's going to be coming up over the weekend here, especially over the Christmas holidays. So, you know, a lot of people, feed mills, a lot of livestock users in there were probably buyers today. They were trying to get some stuff moving fast that way. And we saw, you know, some in the meal, especially to, you know, get those protein levels up in the feed rations.
And so this is a short-lived kind of rally then?
Well, you know, there's some other things that happened too along the way. The Bank of Japan, they ended their decades of easy money. So we're seeing that sort of help prop up the stock market. They're going to start going back into trying to fight for the recession and that also. And we also saw the you know, the bean oil is, you know, coming back to being pretty good in the meal. So, you know, along with it, that and the, you know, we are going to not quite as much rain in Argentina as was projected yesterday. And we sold off hard yesterday and, you know, took back just a little more than that today. So, you know, it's Christmas time, it's holiday trading, and it's hard to say what will last for more than a day.
So what is your experience over holiday trade, especially through the Christmas, New Year's time frame?
A lot of times you'll see a little bit of a rally going into the holiday. When we come back, maybe a little sell-off. But all in all, especially in the livestock, we think that a lot of people are holding stuff until the next year as far as for their tax purposes and stuff like that. And you'll see a little rally between now and the end of the year. So, you know, the way things acted today, it looked like we could possibly see that. You know, the other thing going on we could talk about is the Ukraine. You know, Russia's been bombing the dickens out of their areas. They've been holding up the ships coming in. rather than the ships just as they go out. They haven't had the ships there to load. So we're slowing down the amount of grain coming out of the Ukraine, and it has out of Russia also there's too. So, and we also had some ideas that India is going to try to sell some wheat, is to try to tame the prices a little bit for their area too, because the prices are getting a little high, and they were going to sell some of their government stocks.
All in all, when you take that in balance, what are your expectations once we get to that January 12 final USDA crop production report for the 2020 growing season?
Well, I tell you, the one thing that's going to be, we're going to need to see some corn sales, more than just Mexico, come on the books, or else we're going to have to cut into our export expectations, I think. You know, we've got a lot of stuff going on in that way. And if we could see some, you know, increased sales here between now and then, that would greatly help us not to have to cut or increase our carryout because of our lack of export sales.
Has the trade built this in yet to the marketplace, or will it be a surprise to them should USDA cut the exports?
Well, I can't see how it would be a real surprise. We've talked about it in every market newsletter, on everybody that's out there looking about it for the past 3 months. As we look at it, we look at the idea that, you know, we're not getting our share of China. It looks like South America is going to do this. I mean, the big thing could be that if we see the weather change a little bit, that South America isn't able to export or have the amount of corn bushels that we think they're going to have. But, I mean, that's a little bit of weather and down the road. But I would have to think that the average trader would consider that we will be looking for a decrease in exports in the corn on the January 12th report.
Yeah, thank you much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Wayne Nelson. He is with AgMarket.net. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report for this Tuesday afternoon. Do visit our website or the Farm Doc Daily website, willag.org or farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Do it right now to get yourself registered for the Illinois Farm Economic Summits coming up in Mount Vernon, along with DeKalb and East Peoria, January 10, 11, and 12. On Tuesdays, we always check in on the agricultural energies. Dave Chatterton is now here from Strategic Farm Marketing. Hi, Dave. Thanks for being with us. I appreciate that. Let's get started with ethanol plant margins. How have they been holding up, and what issues do they face?
Yeah, Todd, I mean, not the best of times to be running an ethanol plant here currently. As you know, I mean, if we, you know, I'm sure we can talk a little bit later, but certainly gasoline and refined fuel prices have been on the downturn, and that has resulted in ethanol coming down here as well. We know that corn is off of its highs as the feedstock, but not necessarily falling nearly at any kind of rate that we've seen in the refined fuels or in the gasoline here. So that leaves producers with pretty tough margins. If you look in the West, where there's a corn deficit and basis continues to be strong, those margins are really nothing short of pretty ugly right now. As you come further to the east and get in the central and eastern corn belt, margins for, you know, producers there are, you know, mildly in the red to maybe break even, but certainly nothing to get excited about. So as we kind of get ready to jump into 2023, we've got a few challenges going forward there. Ethanol stocks have been building rather sharply here in the last several weeks, highest this time of the year, really going back in our database to 2015, 2016, and, you know, going to be some tough choices as we get into the new year. Just to frame that up, Todd, I mean, U.S. gasoline demand year-to-date in the calendar year going to end up down about 3.5 to 4% year over year, and that's the major driving factor here with a lack of an export market for ethanol.
Do you suppose the high price of gasoline has caused this in the economy, or something else?
Yeah, I think it's a number of things. I think part of it is the price and the economics. Part of it is the general worry in the economy about where things are going to go and discretionary spending. I think part of it are social economic trends and, you know, just cultural trends of working from home and traveling, you know, less or you know, not that daily commute and different things. We've got the EV and the electric car market that's trying to push in and gain a little bit of market share. So those are things that are all on the, I guess what I would say, on the margin, Todd. But in general, it's resulted in less gasoline being used, and, you know, we have less opportunities to blend ethanol when we see gasoline demand come down.
On the flip side, it appears diesel demand has been good, or at least diesel price has been really high, possibly both, as well as shorter supplies.
Yeah, so pretty dramatic turnaround. We talked about gasoline. Diesel fuel really has kind of done that same thing. If you kind of look at where we're at, I mean, you know, farm diesel right now in most parts of Illinois or the Midwest in general, probably volatility below 350 a gallon, I think, in most cases. And we look at prices today around, you know, lead month diesel fuel is just over $3 here compared to where we've been. You know, you go back not too far even into the summer, and that was in that 370, 375 type of a range for futures. And they're today, they're at, you know, like I said, just above $3. So certainly it's been a pretty good fall here. And looking forward and looking at where we're at right now, I mean, things seem to be turning a little bit. There's a pretty hotly contested debate going forward about the state of the global economy and what that's going to mean for fuel demand, particularly when you throw this Chinese reopening and kind of their 180 on COVID policy into the mix and what that might mean. And you've got, you know, some of the bigger trade houses, the Goldman Sachs and the Bank of America's of the world, talking about a very strong commodity and oil complex next year. You've got others who have a differing view. But certainly from a farm diesel standpoint, just the amount of the decline that we're looking at right now, particularly going into the end of the year where you can prepay some expenses, these look like attractive values to get some fuel in your tank for spring, get some contracts in place, or do some prepaying for some fuel here.
On the macroeconomic side, there are lots of issues at play. I want to come back to the Ukraine war as it relates to diesel fuel, maybe natural gas in just a bit. But stay with China at the moment. What are the two sides saying about the potential issues, and how does the look back over the last 2.5 years at their zero tolerance for COVID and how much they've been able to keep the economy open differ in the storylines both sides are telling?
Well, yeah, I mean, getting quality information out of China about how many cases, how many deaths, and what's really going on, you know, is always a challenge. I think it's going to continue to be that. But if you look at the bigger picture, I don't think there are too many analysts out here or people, market watchers, that would have predicted the pivot or the really a total 180-degree turn in the Chinese policy here. We went from just a few weeks ago of still sticking to a zero COVID policy to now basically all restrictions have been more or less lifted. They are encouraging people to go to work, to do different things, even if they've been diagnosed, and just, you know, follow normal protocols and do different things. So certainly we're seeing a surge in cases here as they kind of try and, you know, expose their entire population to COVID in a very short amount of time, Todd. And I think the question is, you know, how many fits and starts are we going to get in that situation? If they go from zero to fully open, or from the restrictions they had to a more accommodative policy, certainly it has the potential for increasing fuel demand and increasing commodity demand in general. The question is, do they miscalculate here and you know, have to shut back down because, you know, the fear of just their citizens and the issues that they have with maybe their medical facilities and whatever. You've got a citizenry that has been trained, I should say, to be very fearful of COVID and want to be locked down, and all of a sudden you're setting them free, and it's not entirely clear that they're going to take the reins on that and run very quickly.
On the other side, we need to talk about the Ukraine war and the restriction of crude oil coming out of Russia, as well as the reworking of some of how energy is delivered into Europe. Diesel fuel, of course, being shipped out of the United States, natural gas, too. Can you tell me about the effects this has?
Yeah, I mean, certainly the export side of the complex, whether it's LNGs or whether it's refined fuels, including diesel fuel from the U.S., has been part of the reason that we, you know, got, you know, to a very low stock situation earlier in the year. We've seen a very dramatic turnaround in that situation where U.S. stocks have improved quite a bit, and as have global stocks. So U.S. stocks right now in crude oil, about 6% behind the 5-year average, gasoline about 3%. Diesel fuel is still about 8%, or distillates, I should say, below the 5-year average, but that was 27%, you know, just a number of months ago as we came into fall. So things have been improving, and as we look forward, you know, we've got Europe now with a cap in place against the price cap against Russian exports. How effective that's going to be in practice, I think, is very debatable. The market has not shown a lot of fear of that in terms of supply. Certainly Russian exports are challenged in terms of you know, some weather here of late, but more so just in general of people trying to shun those exports in favor of others. So there's been some reshuffling of the deck, as you indicated, in the pipeline transit system into Central Europe or into the EU countries. whether it's the refined fuels or whether it's the natural gas, it certainly has some issues here. We're not getting any more efficient by trying to ship more of this by sea and going the long route around, if you want to put it in those terms, Todd. So there's going to be some stumbles going forward here, and I think we're in a situation, if you look last week, the IEA came out and did something I thought was a little bit, you know, interesting and somewhat incredible. They're talking about oil demand for next year hitting an all-time high by the end of 2023, 104 million barrels a day. That'd be up almost 2 million barrels a day from where we're at right now. So despite all the talk about, you know, renewable energy and green energy and the things that are happening, the transition that's underway, this fossil fuel demand looks like it's going to be rather sticky and rather, in fact, at a record level. And in doing so, you know, it paints the picture, the highlight, and I think the risk that you're talking about in with the Russian situation here.
It will be interesting to watch. Thank you very much for helping us out today.
Thank you, Todd.
Dave Chatterton is with Strategic Farm Marketing. You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Online at willag.org. There you'll find now a way to get yourself registered, by the way, for the Illinois Farm Economic Summit. Or you can go directly to the Farm Doc Daily website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. In either case, you'll find a way to register for the IFAS series. We'll be in person in Mount Vernon on the 10th day of January at the Doubletree. On the 11th, that's a Wednesday, at the Paradise Hotel in East Peoria, and on Thursday, January the 12th, in DeKalb at Ferrandas. You'll want to get yourself registered today. Don't wait. The cost is $80 online, $85 if you print it out and mail it in, and $90 if you walk in. You can also register in person by calling 217-244-9687. I'll repeat that in just a moment. Again, 217-244-9687 between 8 and 4 p.m. Come join us for the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. We'll open our doors each of those days for registration and coffee at 7:45 and then kick things off around 8:20. We'll start with a grain market outlook. Joe Jansen and Scott Irwin will be there. That'll be followed up by a look at South America with Joanna Colusi. We'll talk about budgets and farm income with Gary Schnitke. Nick Paulson will be there along with Jonathan Kappas to discuss the farm bill. And we'll take a look at farmland prices and the interest rates in the nation with Bruce Sherrick. And then wrap things up with a question and answer session at about 11:30 a.m. Central Time in the morning. And follow that up with a lunch that's included in your fee. So be sure to get yourself registered for the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. You can do that online now at willag.org or at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Again, we'll be in Mount Vernon, Peoria, and DeKalb, January 10, 11, and 12. You can also call 217-244-9687 to register for IFAS. Let's check the weather forecast now with Don Day. He's at Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Hi, Don. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
How's the weather in Wyoming today?
Well, I tell you, the western and northern parts of the United States have had a rough last couple of weeks. We had a major snowstorm slash blizzard across parts of the Rockies and the Dakotas. There's a lot of snow on the ground. It's cold and windy, and now we're staring down probably the strongest Arctic cold front in the month of December we've seen maybe in over 30 years. And that is what's going to be moving into the upper Midwest, Corn Belt, and the Great Lakes here just before Christmas. That's going to be causing a whole host of problems.
If you could bring that down from the Arctic Circle and tell us how it proceeds for the United States, I'd appreciate it.
Sure. So what we will see is Arctic air overspreading the northern and central Rockies and northern plains tonight and into Wednesday. And this Arctic air is going to go all the way down into the Gulf Coast. It's going to go in the Rio Grande Valley. We'll see temperatures as cold as the teens and lower 20s as far south as Houston. And then as this Arctic air moves across the plain states, we'll see widespread snows develop across the northern plains and then a rapidly intensifying storm over the southeastern Great Lakes, over the Ohio-Michigan area. This storm is going to rapidly intensify, and it's going to become a full-fledged blizzard for parts of the Great Lakes, parts of the northern parts of the Midwest, and the Arctic air will push all the way down south into Florida. and the southeastern United States by Christmas morning. We could see freezing temperatures in central and northern Florida and a lot of snow on the ground in the nation's midsection and a lot of wind as well. This is a system that, yes, it'll produce heavy snow in some areas, but the cold and the wind, I think, is what's going to be the worst.
Really, really strong wind from what direction?
Well, first, it'll be a very strong southerly wind out ahead of the low as it starts to form, but it's going to be a north to northwest wind that'll be very strong, blowing across the Great Lakes and into the upper Midwest, into the Corn Belt, and it'll be driving very, very cold air out of Canada right into the heart of the nation's midsection. So you're talking sub-zero wind chills. You're looking at overnight low temperatures that will be going below zero in many areas this Christmas weekend. This will be one of the coldest, snowiest Christmas weekends for a large part of the nation we've seen in quite a while.
Once it gets cold enough, it really generally stops snowing. How much snowfall and where across the U.S.?
Well, there will be parts of the Great Lakes, Michigan, parts of Illinois, Wisconsin, Minnesota, parts of Iowa, Indiana, northern Ohio, then into New York and Ontario, easily a foot. There will be 1 to 2 feet in the lee of the lakes due to enhanced effect due to lake effect. In those areas that don't get a foot or two, there'll be a lot of 6 to 12 inches of snow and a lot of drifting.
Is this a dry snow, I take it?
It'll start off wet, but it will become a dry snow. And that's part of the problem, because that's the dry snow that gets easily transported back and forth and drifted very easily.
And just really blizzard conditions a lot of the time, even when snow's not falling in that case, I would think.
That's right. You get into a situation we call ground blizzards, to where the very strong winds are going to continue to wrap around this system and pick up that snow and move it around. Because what will happen is, as the storm intensifies over the Great Lakes, it'll actually drift northward into Ontario and kind of spin around for a couple of days and not moving out too quickly. So even after the snow's done, the cold and the wind will continue for another day or two.
So starting today through how long? Sunday? Later into the week next week?
Yeah, well, we'll see the weather begin to improve probably as early as Monday and Tuesday of next week. We'll see the system move out. That'll give some relief from the Arctic conditions, although the cold Arctic air will still blanket the eastern side of the United States. But usually when you have a major Arctic outbreak like this, you're going to see a spring back. Temperatures will bounce back as the Arctic air unloads out of the northern latitudes. And so there's always usually a warm-up, and that will probably come right around January 1st. Not a big warm-up. We think that this salvo of winter weather is going to probably be followed by more towards the middle of January. So while there will be a warm-up where this is not a one-and-done, there'll likely be more.
Get your preparations done now, because it looks like a rough winter, huh?
It certainly is looking that way. I know for the folks in the Northern Plains, they've already had a December to remember, and they would like to see a break, but it's only December is unfortunately where we're at.
Thank you much, Don.
Thank you.
That's Don Day. He's with Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.